Radiodrome. Welcome to a very special episode of Radiodrome. We got a packed show tonight, so quick, go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME to get 50% off of a single item, to get 3 free DVDs, to get free shipping in the United States, and to get a free mystery gift, all for using the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. We have the interview we kind of plugged last week a little bit. Dr. Bowl will be speaking to us, and you guys are not going to believe the things he says in this interview. Brad is MIA somewhere, right, Brian? I mean, he confirmed with me that he'd be here, and he confirmed with you he'd be here, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm assuming he probably just got, running over filming something.
Alex Jowski is with us as well. Alex, Brad, and I interviewed Dr. Bowl. Brian, you weren't there for the interview, but you've heard it. Without spoiling anything, you got anything to tell people about our interview with Dr. Bowl?
Holy Christ, you need to listen to the entire thing. Like, it's a fantastically enlightening interview.
The thing I found the creepiest is just how open he is in this. You guys have heard the questions I asked. Did I ask him any softball questions or not?
No.
Not that I could tell.
I was asking him some pretty borderline offensive questions. He not only answered them, he answered them with a smile.
Yeah, there were a couple that you even kind of prefaced a little bit. I'm like, where are you going with this, Josh?
I prefaced with a little bit like, I'm not trying to be offensive, but I have to ask. And I kind of thought he'd either hang up or call me a jerk. And he's like, no, see, here is what happened. And he just goes off and it's like, that was brilliant. And then, guys, when we start to say goodnight, don't stop listening, because there's more after that. He goes off after we started saying goodnight on a question we didn't even ask, and it's just, this is great radio you guys are going to hear here. I'm going to ask each of you guys, what do you think of his movies overall?
I wouldn't say fan in, like, the way of, like, ooh, a new one's coming out, I definitely have to check it out, as much as I'd say I'm a fan in that, holy crap, you hear there's a new one coming out. Oh, this one will be even worse than the last one. It's hilarious. Because I've seen a fair number of his films, and they're all just so,
Do you like any of them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple. Honestly, pretty much, like, Rampage is hands down, like, if I would actually show one. Actually, I showed my girlfriend that one about a week or so ago. But, like, a lot of the other ones, I really wouldn't. I think the most recent one I've seen, aside from showing her Rampage, was In the Name of the King 2, and that was just a train wreck.
Big fan of Uwe Boll. I mean, both his video game works are fun for their own reasons. A lot of his serious work of late, like Rampage and Stoic and Darfur, are great, well-made movies. Comedies are just, they're not quite funny as much as they are offensive.
And I think one of the big things with his movies is I don't think he is necessarily a bad filmmaker. Yes, sometimes the films aren't good. I mean, I personally love Rampage, Postal, and Alone in the Dark. And I know I'm going to take some crap for liking Alone in the Dark, but I liked that movie. I think one of the things is the scripts. He tends to pick scripts that are not very good. Like, do you guys know about the Blood Rain script incident?
What was the incident?
The writer who originally, they wrote the original script, they were told it was just going to be a first draft. And even they, when they turned it in, the lady was not happy with it. She assumed someone was going to rewrite it. She showed up for her contractually obligated screening. It was her first draft. No one rewrote the script after she turned her first draft in. He shot that.
Oh, miscommunication.
How does that even happen? I thought there were, like, checks and balances for this kind of stuff.
She just assumed when nobody called her for a rewrite that they hired someone else to rewrite the script.
Not just set it on a coffee table and thought about it.
He shot it as her first draft. And then, as you people, I do ask the question about Michael Madsen. He had no way to control Madsen in that film, as you'll hear. So you can't really blame him for Madsen's performance, can you?
Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have to say, like, I after listening to the interview here earlier, he really does, like, listening to him explain what happened for each of these movies, it's like, you know what, he should get some sort of award just for the effort he put into it. Maybe not the effort that was produced, but you know, the
he was really trying, is what you're trying to say. He really tried.
Together, yeah. He did everything. Like, he made the, it sounds like from hearing him tell it, he made the best movies he possibly could, given the insane circumstances that seem to surround every movie he's attached to.
I think one of the problems he runs into is because of his usually European investors, most of his movies are shot out of the United States. And I think that creates problems right there.
There is that language barrier.
There's that, and it's just so much more difficult to get, maybe if like Postal, which is supposed to take place in America, to find a European city that's going to look enough like an American city. That's probably not an easy thing to do.
Well, I mean, in the interview, Bull does go over the difficulties he had shooting in Romania and different places in Europe.
Right. I think the guy should just find a way to shoot in America.
He was taking advantage of some sort of like a tax shelter that kind of helped out filmmakers, but it required like a certain percentage of that be done like actually in Germany.
And I'm obviously boiling down a lot of specifics into something general here. What it comes down to is him being a German citizen, and there's some kind of German tax loophole where if you invest in a film, you can write off the investment on your taxes. So there's absolutely no risk for the investors. If the movie makes money, they make money. If the movie loses money, they can write off their entire investment on their taxes and they're out nothing.
Now, yep.
That's how you get investors. That's the other thing I like so much about Bull's work. He's more than willing to make fun of himself. Did you guys see Postal at all? How he blatantly makes fun of himself in that?
And his whole, I don't like video games.
Even in Blubberella, where he plays Hitler and makes fun of his own movies? We're going to go to the interview in a minute, but he holds nothing back. You guys enjoy Brad, Alex, and I talking to Uwe Boll. We'll come back afterwards and try and summarize the insanity that you just heard. Hello, Mr. Boll. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us.
No problem. Sorry that I'm 20 minutes late.
It happens. I absolutely love your F*** the critics attitude. You're going to make the movies you want to make.
Thank you.
I guess my first question would be, why did you take this stance, and why do you not give a shit what the critics say?
No, it would be a lie to say that I give a completely shit what the critics say. But at one point in my career, I recognized that in my case, it's a lose battle. When I did House of the Dead and Alone in the Dark, and from this point on, it was like a kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So whatever I did, I got the wrong. I always basically had the feeling whatever I do, even if I do tons of different genres, tons of different movies, and not all based on video games, the result with the critics is always exactly the same. So, and from this point, I in a way gave up on them and said, look, if you don't do your job properly, that you judge movie for movie, and not like basically with a blind eyeglass on just whatever I do bash into the ground, then I don't take you serious anymore. And this was basically an evolving situation. You know, like it was not like something what happened overnight. It was something what happened over a time period of 2 years. So, and since then, I actually feel better.
My favorite movies of yours are Rampage, Postal, and Alone in the Dark. I think Rampage is the one that everyone should go, you know what? Look at this now. If all you saw was House of the Dead, look at Rampage.
No, I agree. I think Stoic, the prison thing I did, is very good. I think Darfur, Attack on Darfur, about the Sudanese genocide, it's very strong. It's basically a little like in the direction of a Rampage, the way I did it. But that movies especially, they got in a way ignored. You know, and the people, and when you read the reviews of whatever, In the Name of the King Part 2, then you have the feeling, I didn't did any movie between In the Name of the King and maybe Far Cry, and then In the Name of the King 2, and they ignored everything what I did in between. And this is, in a way, pissing me off, especially what you said with Postal. If you compare, like, your three favorite films are totally different. You know, like Rampage, Postal, and Alone in the Dark are completely different movies. And so, and this is a thing what I think some people should just do a little more research before they judge somebody like once and for all. Like, this is the worst director ever. Yeah, but based on what? Like, based on what movies? And a lot of people, they watch three movies and then they just posting everywhere that I'm the worst director ever. So it's kind of sad.
Yeah, since you've done some more comedies now too, like Postal, and of course, even going back to like German Fried Movie. What genre do you particularly like working in better, like action or a lot more of the comedic stuff?
It's basically my personal favorites are. Of course, Postal is my personal favorite movie. It was the most fun to shoot that movie, and I still have the most fun to watch that movie. I think it's interesting to see, like, a guy like Seth MacFarlane, who I love Family Guy. I love his stuff. Yeah. So but he's so super successful. And then you do something with real actors like Postal, what is exactly this kind of humor, even maybe a little more political incorrect, even as Family Guy, but very ridiculous. And then it gets like bashed into the ground and the theaters refusing to play it. It was a very, in a way, a very negative experience. At the same time, I was 5 weeks ago in Paris, where they finally released Postal in one movie theater after they bought the movie 5 years ago. And then they invited me to the midnight screening, and the people were laughing their asses off. I couldn't understand one word because it was French dubbing. But I know the dialogue. So and this is the thing. But it's for me most satisfying to see that a lot of people like Postal at least. But they definitely didn't pay it. it's way as illegal downloaded it. So but the second things what I really like is stuff based on reality, and I give it a gritty twist, like a movie like Rampage, what is very cynical. It's also about our whole, like, kind of age of greed. The movie what I just did, Age of Greed, the bailout about the financial crisis, is similar to Rampage, but on Wall Street. And so these are the movies I really like, where I put, in a way, the finger in the wound. And same with the Darfur genocide. The movie is like a 40 minutes of the movie. It's a massacre. Yeah? It's super brutal. But I think it was necessary to show that genocide in Darfur in a hard way, to say, look, is it not a little absurd that we have a war in Afghanistan because we're looking for Bin Laden, who was never there, and then we look and we said, okay, but now we make sure in Afghanistan the woman can vote, but at the same time in Sudan, 350,000 kids and women getting hacked in pieces, and we do nothing. And this is the reason I showed that massacre so straight in the face, to say, look, this is what we allow. And if you think from all the dictators, like Gaddafi dead now, Saddam dead, whatever, but the worst guy is Bashir in Sudan, and he's still in power. So what the f*** are we doing? You know, like, what is that? What is our foreign policy? So if we say we look for a moral and say we cannot allow a genocide anymore, especially learning from the history with the Second World War, and then we just overlook this after Rwanda, the next big thing, and we overlooked it again. You know, like George Clooney and Matt Damon, they were nicely collecting money for the first aid camps, but nothing really happened to stop the genocide.
What initially drew you to directing video game movies and to continue to direct them despite what critics said?
Yeah, the thing was, I did the movie Heart of America about school violence, and it totally made no money at all. And then the company Mindfire, Mark Altman, came to me with the script of House of the Dead. He said he has the rights, he has the script, he's ready to go, but he needs a producer, director. He wants to do it with me. So then I did House of the Dead, and this was, till today, the most profitable movie I did. So it was like $7 million to do, and I think it made $11 million in the box office in US, but it made over $40 million in DVD and TV worldwide. So it was a huge financial hit, and I was backed by investors, and they said, "You have to do this kind of movies. You have to keep going. Whatever fucking video game you can get, we want video game based movies. We don't want the movies like the movies I want to do. Is the stuff what I write also and stuff like this." And I couldn't basically proceed with it. So I was looking out for games I like Alone in the Dark, then later Blood Rain. I like the character of Blood Rain, and I try to acquire video games in a wide range of genres. And so this is the reason that I made so many, because with the video games came the money from the investors. Later, the other movies, they were not financially successful. Alone in the Dark didn't make the money completely back, or Blood Rain also not. And Blood Rain 2, Blood Rain 3, they made money. Or In the Name of the King 2, the smaller movies for direct-to-DVD, they finally made their money. But it was really like that thing, okay, do you want to make movies or you don't want to make any movies anymore? There would be no Rampage or Auschwitz, what I finished, or Darfur, if I would not make that video game-based movies, because then I had a world sales company going and I had some cash flow to say, okay, I want to do that Darfur movie now, and I pay it, basically. You know, so this is the whole story behind it.
Assuming you could get the money, what genre would you like to work in that you haven't yet? Because I can say I would absolutely love to see you take on space opera. I'd love to see an Uwe Boll space opera.
So, no, I personally like genre movies, and it would be fun to do something big or whatever, you know, like the Uwe Boll version of a big Marvel comic movie or whatever. But on the other hand, I'm very interested in what's going on political in the world, and especially with that Bela movie where I'm post-production with. These are the subject matters I really like to do. But of course, it would be nice to have the same budget what Oliver Stone had for Wall Street 2, a movie what I think he f***ed completely up. And I think my Bela movie would be definitely a big theatrical movie if I would have more money to do it. So I had to compromise with how many sets I could have. And then you have a broker room with 60 brokers, but you don't have the broker room with 500 brokers. So, and this is a thing where it's a little sad to compromise, but I would love to make realistic movies with way more money. If you think about a movie like Rampage in New York City, you know, like with $100 million, you could do stuff what nobody ever saw in their lifetime, and this would thrill me to do something like this. And I don't think it will happen. So I don't think a studio comes and gives me this amount of money. I have to keep going with my more personal movies.
My favorite of the movies is Rampage. I like that movie a lot. One of the things I liked was the actors in the movie and their dynamic with each other, their chemistry with each other as well. Was there a lot of room that they had in the movie to kind of improvise with each other, play off of each other, and stuff like that while filming?
Absolutely. It was. I wrote only an extended treatment. And they had to make up the dialogue. I said in the movie will be not so much dialogue. So, and especially him with his family, with Matt Frewer and Linda Boyd, they had a great chemistry together. And it was all the whole kitchen breakfast stuff was all completely improv. Yeah. So we also created, like Brandon and I created his character that he's like that endless, not the endless student, that he didn't even went to university, and he's not leaving his parents' house. He doesn't know what to do. He works at that car shop. So it was very intense with him and me talking about this character. And because he's so a good character actor, I think it was the best way to do it, basically. And then, of course, the action scenes, we had to stage it because there were so many stunts and special effects involved. It was not easy to totally improvise it.
With a lot of your movies, you'll use the same actors over again, like Edward Furlong is in a couple, and Brendan, who you mentioned. Who have been some of your favorite actors to work with?
It's a big range. You have different people, different delivery. As friends, I definitely had Will Sanderson. He played Seed and before in tons of movies, but he stepped out of acting and studied medicine in Texas. So he is not acting anymore, but he was my best friend as actor. And then Michael Paré and Clint Howard are definitely two good friends and actors, and I like working with them. Talent-wise or quality-wise, extremely good is Edward Furlong. It's too bad that he is like just a lunatic drug addict and all that stuff. But I think his talent is there. He's never really, even if he doesn't know his text or whatever, but he is never really off or something. He slips into character and he's really good. In Brandon's case, I saw that he's perfect for movies like Heart of America, where he plays the bully, and Rampage. But he was wrong for Blood Rain 3 or Blobarella, because it's just not his kind of material. This was, in a way, a negative experience with him on these movies, because you felt like he's not that guy who can just be the fighter, the soldier, the cop, or whatever. He's a real character actor. So Ben Kingsley was very easy to work with, comes and delivers, and he has like a strong appearance. Same on in the, Jason Statham was super easy to work with, on a very sportive, easygoing, and never a problem. You know, then you have people like Ray Liotta, Michael Madsen. They are complicated to work with. Burt Reynolds, not easy people. Also, in a way, all nice, but also very complicated and ego-driven and insecure, and you feel like you're not getting really the feedback you want from people like this.
Speaking of like the Michael Madsen and Ray Liotta's and that, are they people you chose, or were they people like the production company said, we want Burt Reynolds in this movie, we want Jason Statham? Because, and I don't mean to be insulting at all, but Michael Madsen looked like he did not want to be in Blood Rain at all.
Absolutely. You're completely right. The thing was, when we were already prepping in Romania, we had Michelle Rodriguez and Cristiano Loken were the first cast in Blood Rain. Then ICM, the agencies, they basically pitched one after the other. And so then in the end, also Michael Madsen came, and he was a mess. He was drinking. He was almost the first day he said to Loken, whatever, like, she's a whore or whatever. Like, he was like losing it on day one. And Sean Williamson, the producer, said to me, he wants to throw him out. And then I went in his locker room or wherever he was. It was pitch black in it. And I went to him and I told him, look, I like you as an actor. I want you in the movie, but I don't know how to do this now. Like, you are insulting everybody. You do every shot he did something else. So the other actors had no clue what he was doing. And and then I made a mistake. I carried him through that whole movie. He was like a mess also. Then he was crying from time to time and drinking a lot and everything. And I basically kept him and didn't throw him out. And it was a mistake. It was also a mistake that I didn't throw out Tara Reid on first day on Alone in the Dark. But these were my first two movies with real cast, like real bigger cast. And then, you know, also, like, if you throw them out, you're not getting the money back. Like, the fees you paid them is gone. And especially in Blood Rain in Romania, where you want to get a replacement? Like, it takes 3 days to get a replacement in a movie like this. You cannot have in a movie like this just a Romanian guy talking barely English taking over. And then the cost would be at least $500,000-$600,000 for the delay to put everything on hold for 3 days. The whole domino stone thing was in front of me, and I felt like, what should I do now? It's like, if you would shoot in LA, you could send Michael Madsen home, you have another guy there 5 hours later, but it's not the case in Romania. This were all like tough decisions, not easy to make, and no, he hated it. And Blood Rain 1, all three Blood Rain movies, I just had a coffee with my DP, Matthias Neumann, and we recognized, like, what were the worst movies we shot, like the from shooting wise, like what was the most horrific shooting experience, and it was all three Blood Rain movies for various different reasons. But Blood Rain 2 was a, like, we burnt down by accident that whole Western city with explosions, couldn't shoot, the biggest insurance case that we ever had, and it was pissing ice rain every night. I had to drive like 1.5 hours to the set, 12 hours nighttime ice rain shooting outside. It was a total disaster. I hated Blood Rain 2 as a shoot. And Blood Rain 1 was so bad because Romania was, it was a big movie. We were 3 months there. The food was horrific. Everywhere was that, like, that wild dogs. We took like wild dogs home. I saved a few dogs, but then I felt more responsible for the dogs as for the movie at one point, because I felt like shit if I couldn't feed the dogs one day. It was like totally affecting me. And then Michael Madsen, and then Michelle Rodriguez, she came to set every day and changed her text. And I said, yeah, but Michelle, it's good that you change your text, but the other people, they they would say still the old text and nothing fits together anymore. And she couldn't, she didn't get it. And I said, like, if you say something, Michelle, and the other guy says the old text, but it's not matching anymore, then we have a total mess. Yeah, so, and she was also, in a way, a lunatic at this point. I don't know what, if she took drugs or whatever, but it was the same thing. She came to set and printed out on her home computer her new lines, and it was crazy. And stuff like this, you know, where it was a very hard shoot and not easy, and then in Blood Rain 3 in Croatia, the same stuff was in winter, nighttime, outside, and also, like, shooting wise, a total disaster.
I like it when this happens a lot, and I don't see it too much anymore. In a situation like Blood Rain 3 and Blubberella, we have movies shot very, very close to each other with some of the same sets and things like. Where did that idea come from? Was that always kind of a plan to do both of those movies very close, and were they shot simultaneously or just like kind of right after each other?
No, it was, I even shot Auschwitz in the end, right? So it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it was, after Postal, I loved Lindsay Hollister in Postal. She did the job interview, right? So what is the difference between a duck? And I loved Lindsay Hollister. I think she's super funny. And when I met her in LA a few times, and I felt like, what can we do together again? Because she's so super fat, it is totally tough to get her in a non comedy normal movie, and I was not doing any comedy. So then I felt like, why not having her as a female superhero? And so using, because I couldn't get the financing together for the separate, to just use the Blood Rain setup and to shoot that two movies parallel with one or two extra days for Blubberella in the end. The problem with this was it was so tough to shoot Blood Rain in that temperature and the different locations that we didn't have enough time for Blubberella. And this is the reason that I think in Blubberella, you have maybe 45 minutes that are really funny and 45 minutes are completely ridiculous shit. Yeah, so... I think Blubberella, like Lindsay, was also not really happy, and she gave me shit that she didn't have enough screen, like shooting time, right? So, and I said, yeah, but what should I do? I cannot have Blood Rain 3 total suffering, because this will be 80% of the revenues. And so it added up a lot of stress. I felt she was feeling shit and she was feeling unhappy. And so the funny experience, or the good experience, was then basically turned into a very bad one. People like Brandon and so on, they were unprepared for the comedy version. And then you have people that are like in improv, they can be funny, but you have also people, if they completely have to improv something, they're not fun. Like Clint Howard, he needs a text, right? And he played the doctor in Blubberella also. And he cannot pull it off. He's not free. Like, he cannot just stand there like a stand-up comedian and basically pull something out of his ass. Yeah. So, but this is the thing. It was overall like a mixed up, not positive experience.
Regarding the video game movies, the ones you've done and the sequels and stuff, how much support do you get from the video game companies themselves, and how does that support or lack of support help with the movie?
Yeah, it is a lack of support generally. The Sega or Atari on Alone in the Dark, Majesco, they did almost, for Blood Rain, they did almost absolutely nothing to promote the movie. They used me as a promotion tool for the game, but they didn't did anything. They didn't spend any co-advertising money when the movies came out or anything like this. On In the Name of the King, the problem was that Gas Power Games sold the rights to the whole game to Square Enix in the end, and they gave a shit about the movie. Then Microsoft was gone as a distributor, so they didn't did anything. I think Microsoft did one promotion thing for us when the movie came out, like a postcard letter where Microsoft was sending out 50 million postcards and they put us on the back of the postcard or something. Better as nothing. Really good, of course, is then when you work with people like Vince Dizzy from Running with Scissors. Postal is their only game, and they came to set, they played in the movie, they promoted the movie with their minimal financing they have, yeah, with the minimal abilities they have. So, but they were behind it and pushing it. And on Far Cry, because I bought the rights from Crytek, the guys that did Far Cry, before the first game came out, and then Ubisoft, and I got it very cheap. So then Ubisoft was super mad with Crytek that they sold the movie rights. And so, and they were so pissed they didn't support the movie at all. I offered Ubisoft that they make the CGI on Far Cry because they have a CGI company in Montreal, and they refused it. They said, we don't want to have anything to do with the movie. So so this was also not a very good experience. Yeah, so overall, I cannot say that the video game companies are very supportive. They just want to sell the license.
Do you think at this point it might be your name? And have you ever thought of kind of pulling a bit of a prank, direct an entire movie, you know, something as dead on and hard as like Darfur or Rampage, and do it under a pseudonym, and then after everyone says how good it is, go, it was Uwe Boll, fuck.
Yeah, I know. And we discussed it already 4 years ago. The problem is, in times like today, everybody from the set has phones, iPhones, Facebook, whatever, and Twitter. You have no chance anymore. If you do that 20 years ago, you could do that, you know, but because there was basically whatever the fax machine was there, but nothing else. But today, now it would leak because the crew would know that it's that you are the guy, or you put just a Darth Vader helmet on and nobody sees you ever, you know, and you sit there on your director chair with a Darth Vader helmet or something, you know, like a Spider-Man mask, and nobody knows who you are. Even this is strange, but especially if you make a movie where it matters that you have good contact to the actors, like in Darfur. Can you imagine I would stay in front of Sudanese refugees and I say, look, I have that Batman thing on, don't worry. It would work. Yeah, so I think it's a good idea. It would be interesting, but it's also unrealistic.
What would your dream video game movie project be? Like one that you don't think would probably get made, but is like would be like the dream one to go after?
In the beginning, I really liked the Hitman idea, to do Hitman, but then they made the movie, and I had Jason Statham ready to do it, and but I didn't get the rights, so Eidos sold then the rights to somebody else. But before that, they sold to me Fear Effect, what I never did then, and I was super pissed with Eidos. I said, I buy Fear Effect only if I get Hitman also, and they said, yeah, don't worry, we have your interest in our thing. But of course, now from movies never made, of course, Grand Theft Auto, World of Warcraft, this would be the top choices as big movies to make. And I think Grand Theft Auto, if these guys would watch Rampage, maybe they would think I'm the right guy to do it. Because I think if you make a Grand Theft Auto movie, you have to do it NC-17. If Michael Bay is doing it, they in the end have a PG, like a PG-13 Grand Theft Auto movie, and it will make $200 million box office because they spend $100 million advertising, but it will be shit.
I'm imagining you're an avid video game player since you've done so many video game adaptations. What would be your favorite video games?
Yeah, to play.
To play.
I love Silent Hill. Always. I just love that game. It's that creepy atmosphere. It's a great sound. So this is the best thing when you play it alone. And because I started so early with an Atari and Commodore computer, I was addicted to Asteroid and like super easy games to play. Yeah, my nephew is right now. He is the son of my brother. He makes he works at Crytek right now in Frankfurt, and he's test playing a Crysis 3 the whole time. And so he tries to find the bugs, but he's the guy who, like, he kills me in every single game we do. But he's like going to LAN parties, played in the German championships, and so on. So against guys like this, I'm just a total loser. And definitely, I had fun playing that. And Call of Duty, of course, right? So, but for example, Call of Duty is for me, it's just like it's almost a movie already. if you play a game like this, then you doesn't see the value anymore to make a movie out of it, because you have it just in front of you, and even better as a movie. This is the thing. I think it needs also a little gaps to fill, or like black holes in a way, in the game to make an interesting movie out of it. With some of the high-end games now, they're getting closer and closer. They have openings of 30 minutes, like movies, you know, like crazy stuff. So I think it gets more and more, in a way, uninteresting to make games or movies out of games if the movie's evolving in that speed. How's that involved?
Yeah, I could actually see you doing a Saints Row the Third movie. I think that would kick ass. But have you ever thought about doing TV, or are you just movies? Because I could see you totally doing like a CSI Miami episode or something like that.
Yeah, but I don't have an agent in, you know, I never had an agent. I never had a manager. And I think this kind of jobs you get only if you have an agent. And I met a few agents a few years ago, and I couldn't. They said like, no, you're too specific, like whatever. And I could not make it work. I felt also like this is, in a way, I don't need a daddy or somebody who takes care of my business. I'm very good with business, you know, like it's like I don't need somebody negotiating a deal for me. I need somebody who comes in, who brings me some interesting projects, what I normally would not get, or whatever, like some, or pitches me for stuff where I don't know that it's even in the development phase somewhere. And this agent I never found. So this is the reason I don't have an agent. I don't want to give somebody 10% of a fee for a movie what I produced. There's also, I said, like I said, no, you have to give us 10% of your fee no matter what. I said, yeah, but look, if I raise all the money and I make whatever, Blood Rain 2, why I should give you 10%? This is totally absurd. And they wanted the 10%. So this was another deal breaker for me.
What are some stuff coming up that you're really looking forward to?
No, I'm very excited about Bailout. The movie turns out really good. We're doing the CGI right now and the sound mix. I'm very happy that movie turned out so good. Dominic Purcell plays the lead, and he is, I think, he's a very underrated actor. I think he has the same power and abilities to be a big action star like a Jason Statham. I'm happy that he agreed to play in The Name of the King 3, what we will shoot in September in Bulgaria. And so because Dolph Lundgren is not the best actor on earth, let's say it this way. He is a good type, but he's not a real, he's not a real actor in a way. So, and with Dominic Purcell, I can bring somebody in King 3. I think the script is way better as King 2. So the story is better. And with him, I have a real actor who will have also like a character development during the movie, and a real deadline and stuff like this. So it will be like a fight against the time. He has to go back to medieval times, but he has to come back because otherwise people will die in today's time. And I think we have a good setup there. Yeah, I'm happy to shoot that movie. And then I have another movie in development, what I've write also this time on my own, and it will be in India. I felt after Slumdog Millionaire, nothing really came from India. Only the bullshit movies, basically, again. What I liked in Slumdog was this kind of, you are in a different world and you do something very realistic. And I looked into the whole organ trade business in India, where like thousands of people per month from the slums getting basically, you know, whatever, the kidney is out. Like they wake up and they took the kidney out, you know, stuff like this. So it will be a very hard thriller, but based in India and very realistic in that Darfur way. I think this is something I develop it right now, and I hope I maybe can do it next year.
You've done both movies that were for theatrical release and some that were specifically for DVD release. From a distribution standpoint, which has been the easiest for you, the ones that you found the most success and comfort with?
No, of course, the direct-to-DVD business is more, you can calculate it better, and you know better what you will get. So then you, it's not so high risk. And the theatrical business is, of course, more interesting, and it's more fun to see your screen on the big screen and to go to festivals and so on. But it is also a lot of times very, in a way, frustrating. Where when I was fighting for Postal, that Postal gets some screens. I was in New York and everything. And then in New York, we got only one screen in the end in Brooklyn. And it was very tough to get a movie like Postal out. And then you travel through the country to different, like you spend a lot of lifetime promoting that movies. And you feel you don't have a real chance because you just don't have that $50 million advertising behind you. What the major movies have. The funny thing, for example, take In the Name of the King. It was in US, a freestyle release, and it failed. But in other countries, like in Europe, 20th Century Fox released it, and the box office was good. Like, and this is the thing. It's like, in a way, like very disappointing for movies, and to see your main big movie, like In the Name of the King, with Jason Statham, and then you don't get a properly studio release in US, even if in Europe, the same studio, like Fox, made. We were number. We started against American Gangster same weekend in Europe, and they were number one. We were number two, and in week two we were number five in the box office. So the movie definitely worked, and I'm sure in US that movie would made also $30 or $40 million box office if we would got a normal release on 2,500 screens and with the advertising behind it, and it didn't happen. So, and this was then very, very disappointing.
I just want to say thanks for being so, you know, outgoing, so honest with us and open about a lot of stuff.
You've been more honest than I think 90% of Hollywood.
It's incredibly rare you see that with when you're talking to a director.
No, so, thank you very much. And look, I think it makes no sense to sugarcoat things or to just talk around stuff and bullshit around and so on, you know. And this is also one of the reasons, like, it was interesting when I was in Bulgaria now, they were shooting a 300 Part 2 Warner Brothers movie. And Mark Canton, the big producer, and he talked to – I never met him, right? So – and he has another producer from Warner. And he said, like, this guy said, oh, Uwe Boll, are you crazy? Don't work with him. He's crazy, you know. So out of the blue, like he was talking to that studio owner in Bulgaria, and the studio owner told me what they said. And I said, look, this is the image I have in Hollywood based on what? Like, I never met this guy, so this guy maybe Googled me or whatever, read a few articles about me, and now he has that opinion. But then they hire for 300 Part 2 a director who never shot a movie. At all. And this is a typical studio behavior. And then they have this guy who shot two good music videos and he gets hired for a movie like 300. And now he doesn't know what to do at all. And they go every day 3 hours overtime and they will go $20 million over budget, you know, and they think they're the clever guys. And this is the sad part of it. You know, like when I see like what people like in Hollywood or whatever, what they say about me. How is that crazy when you made 29 movies and they were all made on time and budget? You know, like, is that crazy? Or is that like that you showed that you can make movies and that you are disciplined enough to make movies, even with shit happening like Blood Rain 2, where that gas heater stuff exploded and burned down the whole railway station? You know, we still made the money back. And this is the thing. It's like, this is in a way pissing me off. You know? But this is typical Hollywood. In Hollywood, what works is if you're just like you just create an illusion around you. You are that super hip guy, the super cool guy. This is why they have managers. You know, like this is the guy who won the short movie competition in San Sebastian. Now you have to hire him for the Avengers. You know, like it's crazy. It's totally absurd what criteria they have in picking the people. This is, by the way, also that big dispute what I had about Michael Bay all that years. You know, like the thing is, like, the good parts in Michael Bay's movies are all not made by him. Like the big stunt shit from Bad Boys, he's not there. The stunt coordinator is doing stuff like this. Or the CGI stuff in Transformers or whatever is like, it's not made by him. This is made by super talented, high-end, super expensive companies. And these are the strong parts of his movies. And the drama part from Pearl Harbor to Transformers sucks. The dialogue and the characters are all completely shit. And what I said is if you give Like, there are 50 directors they would make with $200 million. The way every single movie would be way better made from other directors. You know, so this is only my opinion about it, that it's just like it's so easy if you have 200 million to make the technical aspects of a movie flawless, mm-hmm. because you just have the best people doing it all, you know. So, but if you see a shit movie like Prince of Persia or whatever, you know, there's no excuse for it to make a movie like this if you have all the resources. But also, this director maybe never made a movie before. I don't know what the director was, the director, but there are tons of movies made where you just think, like, how can they pick this guy? Based on what? So, naya. Okay.
Well, that's actually what we're trying to hope to do with, like, interviews like this. When we told people we're going to be interviewing you, we had people in the industry like, why? And we said, because he's a f***ing straight shooter and he makes good movies.
Thank you that you said that. Yeah.
Big fan of all your movies, especially, as I mentioned, Stoic and Darfur.
Rampage, definitely.
Absolutely Rampage. I don't know why everyone shits on Alone in the Dark. I liked Alone in the Dark quite a bit.
Yeah, I have to say, it was in TV, in German TV, 2 weeks ago. And we were sitting here, like, having a barbecue. And then we basically switched channels and I was running. And then we watched 45 minutes. I think the monster action is okay. And Stephen Dorff and Christian Slater both do a good job. This is my personal opinion. Tara Reid is painful to watch for me. But...
Well, at least I'm not the only one that thinks that.
Yeah, I know.
So I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and being as brutally honest as you are. All right, now, was that not nuts or what, guys?
It's a crazy interview.
I just love how he'll start answering a question and then it seems like a quick question, and then he just goes on for hour, seemingly. Like, well, you mentioned, like, working with people like Edward Furlong, and then he just, like, oh, by the way, and all this crazy stuff about Edward Furlong.
He's telling it like it is, which, yeah, I think, like, is one thing that really makes him not popular in Hollywood.
Is he calls Edward Furlong his friend, respects his talent, but he still says he's a drug-addicted lunatic.
That's actually one thing I really do respect, and I think all the listeners to this show, doesn't matter if you like his movies or not, you can't not respect this man, can you?
No, he's an amazing guy.
You got to respect, like you pointed out earlier, kind of his tenacity, but also his "I'm not holding anything back" attitude, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of appreciate that he is so far outside of Hollywood that he is just completely unaffected by the general politics of it. It's like he's not just going to sit there like, oh yeah, it was such an honor working with someone like Michael Madsen, someone of his caliber, you know. It's like, no, like, I was a drunken asshole. I hated it.
Talks about Alone in the Dark, and he says that Tara Reid is still unwatchable.
I agree with that. I like I said, I like Alone in the Dark, but Tara Reid's pretty unwatchable in that.
Oh, come on, she was wearing those glasses. She's totally a scientist, you guys.
Christian Slater's charisma actually balanced her anti-charisma out, I think. What it comes down to, I'm personally really looking forward to his Occupy Wall Street movie. Well, we may not like all the movies. I think I'm speaking for all four of us, Brad included, when we say, please keep making movies, because when there's a good one, it's a damn good one. And I agree with you, Brian. Rampage is an amazing film.
Oh, yeah, definitely worth the wait. I mean, it was one of those things, like, the first time I watched it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then 5 minutes in, I'm just completely captivated. This is really, really good. Like, I think as soon as I finished watching that one, like, I, like, ran over to Brad's. I'm like, dude, you have to watch this right now. Come with me.
That's one of the things I liked about Postal. I liked the fact that, like Alex pointed out, as a comedy, it's offensive as hell.
Yeah,
and I loved that. He did not pull any punches in that movie. Every racial stereotype, every derogatory thing you could think of was in that film, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's the same thing with Blubberella. I mean, the jokes aren't very good. The humor in it is the same as the Setzer Friedberg kind of humor. But it crosses that line by such a degree, it makes it enjoyable.
Well, I do have to kind of give him credit for, yeah, his description, like listening to him talking about Postal, because... Yeah, that one's definitely one that I did not enjoy watching. Hearing him, like, the way he talked about it and the way he described it is sort of basically, like, more so over-the-top live-action version of, like, a Family Guy episode. I'm like, well, okay, I can kind of see, like, looking at it like that, I can see that.
He is one of the most original and hardworking filmmakers around, and the guy does know what he's doing despite the bad reputation he gets.
I have respect for the guy. I mean, I've respected him to the nth degree ever since their years back when he decided to hold a boxing match for all of his critics. I mean, that takes balls. I mean, he's insane, and it just works for him, and I really hope he doesn't plan on stopping making movies anytime soon.
Well, first of all, he's been getting better. He's been getting better. If you look at his early films from House of the Dead to the current stuff like Darfur, you can see a much better filmmaker there. And I think he's choosing better projects, and he's become, I think, a real force to be reckoned with outside of Hollywood.
Yeah.
He's showing Hollywood that you don't need all your money in your marketing machine to make a even decent film.
Definitely looking forward to In the Name of the King 3, something I never would have thought I'd say after watching Part 2.
Where can we find Brian Lewis?
You can find me and Brad when he shows up over at thecinemasnob.com.
What about Alex Jowski?
Geekjuicemedia.com.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com, 1201beyond@gmail.com, and you know the rest of the spiel. So, guys, have a good night, and spread that Uwe Boll interview around, because I think people in Hollywood need to hear this.
Why can't you